And now it's time for the Earth First Update, all the environmental news you can use. Hi, I'm Uncle Dennis in a secret studio in the Pacific Northwest here on July 16th. And I'd like to ask you to have a pencil and paper handy because you never know when there might come a web page, an email address, telephone number, something you want to write down and take action on later. Let's start with the Buffalo Field Campaign's update from the field. The summer months are keeping us busy at the Buffalo Field Campaign. Our tabling crew continues to do a stellar job representing the buffalo, running our information table inside Yellowstone National Park and spreading the word about these sacred herds. School groups have been coming through camp to learn about the buffalo, and we just had an amazing visit with students from the Wild Rockies Field Institute, who were deeply inspired by the time they spent in the field with our co-founder Mike Mies. We had an awesome visit with some of our friends from the Nez Perce tribe as they traveled back from ceremonies in North Dakota. We are also busy bringing in wood for our coming field system, and would like your help during Woodcut Week, and we'll have more information on that in just a second. Our annual newsletter is now hot off the press and will arrive in your mailboxes by the time this broadcast is heard. We're also going to be participating in the Helena Brewers featured nonprofit program, so Mike will be throwing out the first pitch on July 26th. And then during August 7th through 9th, we'll be standing in solidarity with Wolves at the second annual Speak for Wolves event, where Mike will give a presentation and Goodshield Aguilar will play music. There's always something going on in the land of the last wild buffalo. All right. On a much more somber note, 19 of the quarantined Yellowstone buffalo that were transported from the Corwin Springs quarantine prison to the Fort Belknap Reservation were found dead last week. This is nearly half of the herd that went to Fort Belknap barely 2 years ago. The cause of death is currently unknown. Anthrax was suspected but has so far been ruled out. Fort Belknap is home to the Gros Ventre and Assiniboine tribes, located in north-central Montana, land that was once teeming with buffalo. Buffalo wallows and trails can still be found on this beautifully breathtaking open prairie country, and you can feel their ghosts everywhere. The deaths of these buffalo has been a huge blow to the indigenous community. It breaks our heart to think of all that they suffered, having been captured as wild calves from Yellowstone, torn from their families, shipped to slaughter, forced to live in a domesticated prison where they were abused by scientists and then shipped like livestock to their human relatives that have so anxiously awaited their return to their shared landscape. Those that died and those still living there have been forced by U.S. and Montana government regulation to live under quarantine conditions, fenced in on a 1,000-acre pasture, and they are now dying in that enclosure, a reservation within a reservation. The deaths of these buffalo are another glaring example of the profoundly negative consequences of quarantine. We stand in solidarity with the Native peoples and the First Nation buffalo cultures. We work towards a day when the fences come down and the buffalo can migrate freely on their own hooves from Yellowstone to the prairies, restoring themselves upon the land and spreading in every direction along that way. That day is going to come. And mark your calendars. Woodcut Week is August 31st through September 4th. Join the Buffalo Field Campaign for our annual Woodcut Week, August 31st through September 4th. Please join us at our headquarters near West Yellowstone as we haul, cut, and stack the wood that will keep our field volunteers warm this winter. We provide a place to stay and tasty meals. For more information, contact the Buffalo Field Campaign. Area code 406-646-0070, or email to Meese, that is M-E-A-S-E, at wildrockies.org. That's Meese at wildrockies.org. The Buffalo Field Campaign can be reached via their website, www.buffalofieldcampaign.org, where this and more information can be found. If you have something to send to the Buffalo Field Campaign, send it to P.O. Box 957, West Yellowstone, Montana, 59758. And once again, the webpage, www.buffalofieldcampaign.org. The Buffalo Field Campaign is the only group working in the field every day in defense of the last wild buffalo in the United States. And up in British Columbia, a conservation officer has been suspended for refusing to kill bear cubs. British Columbia Conservation Officer Bryce Cossavant has been suspended without pay for refusing to kill two black bear cubs near Port Hardy after their mother was killed for repeatedly raiding a freezer full of meat and salmon. Despite an order to kill the cubs, Cossavant took them to a veterinary hospital. They are now at a recovery center run by the North Island Wildlife Recovery Association in Errington, which, like Port Hardy, is on Vancouver Island. Robin Campbell, the recovery center's manager, said the conservation officer did the right thing, as the cubs were not habituated to humans and will be reintroduced into the wild. The mother bear was a problem, but these cubs did nothing. After Cassavant's suspension was reported in a community paper, an online petition was started asking Environment Minister Mary Pollock in British Columbia to reinstate the officer. The Conservation Service had been called by a homeowner to deal with the cub's mother after she repeatedly raided the freezer inside a mobile home south of Port Hardy, said Campbell. The cubs, a brother and sister, returned to the property looking for their mother. They climbed a tree next to the mobile home and were removed by a team of firefighters and a conservation officer. Cassavant tranquilized the cubs and took them to a veterinarian who found they were in good health, Campbell said. Campbell, whose facility has a provincial permit to rehabilitate black bears, called the order to kill the cubs unusual since they were fearful of humans and good candidates for release. In 30 years, this is the first time we've ever had an issue like this, he said. There has to be some kind of misunderstanding. Hopefully, somebody will come to their senses. The British Columbia Ministry of Environment hasn't said what it plans to do about the cubs now, but in a statement, the Conservation Officer Service is investigating the situation, including the actions of its members. This is a very sad and unfortunate situation, said Pollock in a statement. Although conservation officers must sometimes put down wild animals for the safety of the public and the welfare of the animal, we understand how difficult this is for all involved. Pollock said senior science biologists and the provincial wildlife veterinarian are involved in the decision whether to relocate or destroy an animal in addition to the local conservation officer. The ministry said it could not comment on personnel matters due to privacy rules. Cassavant, however, confirmed he had been suspended without pay over the cubs issue, but declined to comment further. A SeaWorld employee posed as an animal activist for years, PETA said. In this story by Chris Palmieri of Bloomberg Business, as found on the Earth First Newswire. A SeaWorld Entertainment Incorporated employee posed for years as an animal rights activist, joining protests against the company over its use of captive killer whales, according to People for the Ethical Treatment of Animals. PETA, based in Norfolk, Virginia, said that a California activist who identified himself as Thomas Jones has been taking part in the group's activities. He protested a SeaWorld float in New York's Thanksgiving Day parade in 2013, held anti-SeaWorld signs outside the company's San Diego theme park, and got hauled away by police at the 2014 Rose Parade in Pasadena, California, PETA said. PETA officials believe that Jones is another man, 28-year-old Paul McComb, who has worked in a number of positions at SeaWorld since at least 2008, including as a human resources representative, according to a job history posted on the website jresume.com. The claim, if true, could mark another public relations black eye for SeaWorld, which has faced withering criticism of its marquee attraction, trained killer whales performing for guests. The company has endured a critical commentary, boycotts, and the loss of sponsorship. Attendance and revenues have suffered. We focused on the safety of our team members, guests, and animals, and beyond that, we do not comment on our security operations, Fred Jacobs, a SeaWorld spokesman, said in a statement Monday. This is a responsibility that we take very seriously, especially as animal rights groups have become increasingly extreme in their rhetoric and tactics. SeaWorld didn't respond to other questions, including whether McComb works for the company. McComb reached by a mobile phone using the number at jresume.com site, declined to say if he was a SeaWorld employee, and hung up when asked if he used the name Thomas Jones. Jones used social media to contact other activists for information. What is the big surprise for the upcoming protest? Are we going to pull up the gates or something? He asked another activist in a March 2014 message provided by PETA. He also urged activists on, "Grab your pitchforks and torches, time to take down SeaWorld," Jones said in comments on Facebook before a July 4th, 2014 SeaWorld protest. Photos of Jones on his Facebook page resemble those of McComb, posted on the page of his wife, Brittany McComb. Reached by phone, she confirmed she is married to Paul McComb, while declining to answer any other questions. Hal Weiss, an activist who sat next to Jones in a police van after the Rose Bowl protest, said he is certain the pictures of McComb are the same man. Lisa Lang, a PETA spokeswoman in Los Angeles, said she met Jones 3 times and that the photos on Brittany McComb's Facebook page matched those of the activist. "It's definitely him," Lang said in a phone interview. SeaWorld, which owns 11 theme parks in the United States, has experienced a public relations tsunami since the release of Blackfish documentary in 2013. The film, produced by Manio Productions and aired repeatedly on CNN, argues that killer whales are too big to be kept in captivity. At the urging of petitioners at Change.org and groups including PETA, artists such as Willie Nelson have canceled appearances at SeaWorld's flagship park in Orlando, Florida. Southwest Airlines Company ended its marketing relationships with SeaWorld a year ago. SeaWorld's attendance dropped in 2013 and again in 2014. At a recent price of $18.51, the shares are a third below the $27 April 2013 price when the company first sold stock to the public. And Thunder captain and officers faced justice in the wake of Operation Icefish in this story from Sea Shepherd Conservation Australia. The captain, chief engineer, and second mechanic of the notorious poaching vessel Thunder have been charged with counts of pollution, reckless driving, forgery, and negligence in Sao Tome and Principe. The charges were handed down in a local court on Friday following a 3-month investigation into the events surrounding the sinking of the poaching vessel in the waters off the West African island state on April 6th. Captain Luis Alfonso Rubio Cataldo of Chile, Chief Engineer Agustin de Silrey of Spain, and Second Mechanic Luis Miguel Perez Fernandez, also of Spain, have been assigned residency and are not permitted to leave the country while they await trial. At the time it sank, the Thunder had been the target of a 110-day record-breaking continuous pursuit by the Sea Shepherd ship, the Bob Barker. The pursuit began when the conservation ship intercepted the poaching vessel engaged in illegal fishing for vulnerable toothfish on the Banzari Bank in Antarctica, a region managed by the Commission for the Conservation of Antarctic Marine Living Resources. Sea Shepherd believes the Thunder was intentionally scuttled in an effort to hide its cargo of vulnerable toothfish illegally caught in the CCAMLR-managed region. The Bob Barker, captained by Peter Hammarstedt of Sweden, and fellow Sea Shepherd ship San Simeon, captained by Sid Chakravarti of India, rescued the Thunder's entire crew of 40, who all disembarked to life rafts after the vessel sank. Before the Thunder was fully submerged, members of Sea Shepherd crews were able to board the vessel and collect evidence from the sinking ship, including a frozen toothfish that was later handed over to police. Captains Hemmerstedt and Chakravarti reported details of the incident and rescue operation to authorities, including international policing organization Interpol. As a result of this information, the entire crew of the Thunder was detained on arrival in Sao Tome and Principe, where the captain and two officers have been held ever since. Captains Hemmerstedt and Chakravarti have been congratulated. All involved in the investigations, particularly authorities in Sao Tome and Principe. When Operation Icefish began, we promised we would drive these poachers out of the shadowlands of the Southern Ocean and into the hands of justice. Thanks to cooperation from a network of international law enforcement and authorities in Sao Tome and Principe, who spearheaded investigations into the Thunder, that promise is now realized, said Captain Hemmerstedt. And moving to Mexico, wolves claim responsibility for the burning of excavators and construction equipment in this anonymous report from Contra Info, as found on the Earth First Newswire. Bit by bit, we have started to drown in this concrete jungle provoked by a progress of a decadent system that is driven on by a few individuals who think they own the world. They have been laying waste to it bit by bit, and even now they continue to pillage wild nature in an attempt at domination. Against them, we appeal to direct action to put the brakes on this machinery that devours these spaces, such as Primavera Forest, literally Springs Forest, also called Protected Natural Area, outside of Zapopan. To all those who would threaten wild nature in our lives, we say that we will not stop until we see you destroyed. This is the beginning, and we are ready for more. Today it was just the machinery that we burned. Tomorrow it could be the lives of those who demand the destruction and looting of nature. We are not interested in dialogues or pacts with your authorities. We don't want the donation of small spaces that you call nature preserves or protected areas. We don't want your scraps of forests, and we will not engage in dialogue for the liberty that was stolen from us. We are tired of resisting, as we have for more than 500 years now. This is our moment, and we are taking the offensive. We will not cross our arms and watch you destroy the earth, taking flora and fauna with it. We are wolves on the hunt, and you are and will always be our prey. In the early morning of Monday, July 15th, we attacked the construction site of West Plaza Park, a future warehouse and industrial ship company. This project was being built in the vicinity of the Primavera Forest, an ecosystem that is in grave danger due to the construction of subdivisions and infrastructure projects. The need to defend this territory has become evident when what little defense is shown takes place through ambiguous and insipid campaigns. Thus, we lay claim to the burning of construction equipment, excavators, transport vehicles, and industrial tubing on your property. We waited in the forest before coming out to attack. The moon and the fireflies lit up the night before melting together with the fires of savages. In defense of all that is savage, signed, Wolves. And speaking of wolves, the famed wolf OR7 has sired a second litter of puppies in southern Oregon. Big news for wolf recovery on the West Coast. Wildlife officials in Oregon report the wolf OR7, who made international headlines in 2011 for becoming the first wild wolf in California in 87 years, has sired another litter of pups. OR7 has been roaming southern Oregon and northern California for the past 4 years. He finally found a mate last year and had a litter of pups. It's happened again for the second year in a row. While the new pups haven't been seen, biologists say they've found scat, making it clear there's another litter. It's great news, but the future of wolf recovery in Oregon and the West still hangs in the balance. Oregon wildlife commissioners are considering a proposal to end state protections for wolves, and the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service keeps pushing to end federal protection for nearly all wolves around the country. OR7 traveled 4,000 miles to find a mate and start a family, said the Center for Biological Diversity's Amarok Weiss, but this important recovery can only continue if we keep protecting wolves. Polar bear recovery plan allows 85% population decline. For the first time ever, the Fish and Wildlife Service released a recovery plan for a species that defines recovery as an astonishing 85% decline in that species' numbers after it is listed under the Endangered Species Act. The plan allows Alaskan polar bears to be considered recovered if they have only a 90% chance of persisting for 100 years, and while it recognizes that climate change threatens to wipe out a majority of the world's polar bears, it proposes no meaningful measures to combat the threat. Without significant cuts in global warming emissions, Arctic sea ice loss driven by climate change is predicted to drive the bears extinct. The Obama administration's Interior Department released the plan just as Shell's oil rigs were making their way north to begin drilling in the polar bear's fragile Arctic habitat with the administration's blessing. When it comes to carbon pollution melting the polar bear's Arctic world, this plan just shrugs and hopes for the best, said the center's Rebecca Noblin. Without specific targets for cutting greenhouse gases, we'll see more and more bears drowning and starving to death. And in a court victory, grazing hurts endangered species in Arizona's Fossil Creek. A federal court has ruled that cows grazing in the Fossil Creek watershed of central Arizona damaged the critical habitat of the threatened Chiricahua leopard frogs, a violation of the Endangered Species Act. Grazing in stream corridors impedes these rare frogs' movement among breeding sites, according to the court's opinion. Livestock spend a disproportionate amount of their time in riparian zones, and grazing can eliminate vegetation cover as well as spread disease, the court said. Cows munching, trampling, and defecating bring serious degradation to streamside ecosystem. The ruling, which resulted from a lawsuit filed by the Center for Biological Diversity, could mean the Fish and Wildlife Service will institute new rules to protect river habitat from harm caused by cattle. Fossil Creek is one of the Southwest's most biological precious river reaches, said the Center's Jay Linninger. The ruling is a victory for this beautiful creek, native wildlife, and public investments made to recover them. We're glad the court is demanding a course correction. And coyote incidents in Southern California prompt precautionary reminders in this story from the California Department of Fish and Wildlife. Due to a recent increase in the number of human coyote incidents in Southern California, California residents should be particularly vigilant in watching their children and pets when outdoors. In the past month, there have been 4 incidents in Irvine, California, where young children were either bitten or scratched by a coyote, resulting in minor injuries. These incidents highlight the importance of communities working together to eliminate sources of food that might attract wildlife to neighborhoods, said Captain Rebecca Hartman of the California Department of Fish and Wildlife's Law Enforcement Division. When coyotes are fed, either intentionally or unintentionally, by food left out, they can become a public safety threat. California Department of Fish and Wildlife volunteers have been conducting outreach and distributing wildlife information to residents in Irvine and other areas of Southern California, and trappers have been deployed to locate and humanely euthanize coyotes in the area where the incidents have occurred. During the warm summer months, particularly from March through August, coyotes are particularly active. They are raising their young and are in almost constant search for food. Coyotes are highly adaptable and often live in close proximity to populated areas where food and water sources are abundant. They usually fear humans and avoid interactions. However, if they begin to associate humans with food, they can lose their natural fear and become bold and aggressive. Here are some coyote safety tips. Keep a close eye on small children when outdoors. Keep small pets inside, particularly at dawn and dusk hours when coyotes are most active. Keep all pets on a leash when walking. Keep pet food and water dishes inside your home. Secure food and trash at all times and remove all sources of water from your property. Pick up fallen fruit and keep compost piles tightly sealed. Sweep up any fallen bird seed, which can attract mice and rats, a common food source for coyotes. Remove brush, wood piles, and debris where coyotes can find cover and where rodents are abundant. Install motion-activated lights and sprinklers. If a coyote approaches or acts aggressively, throw rocks, make noise, jump up and down, look big, and pick up small children and pets. Do not turn your back on the animal. If a coyote is frequently seen around schoolyards or play yards or is acting aggressively, contact your local animal control officer or the California Department of Fish and Wildlife. and if a coyote attacks, call 911. There has only been one recorded fatality in California for my coyote attack. Coyote attacks are relatively rare, and the mere presence of a coyote does not constitute a public safety threat. However, in areas where coyotes are highly visible and active, caution is advised. For more information on living responsibly with wildlife, go to the website www.keepmewild.com. That's keepmewild.com. And no charges have been filed against a cougar hunter who killed Echo the Wandering Wolf. He said, "I had a shot and I took it." This story by Brian Mayfley of the Salt Lake City Tribune. A Beaver County cougar hunter will not face charges for shooting an endangered gray wolf last December. U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service investigators concluded the hunter mistook the collared 3-year-old female wolf for a coyote. Coyotes are not only legal to hunt year-round in Utah, but subject to a $50 bounty. The hunter reported his mistake immediately, said Steve Oberholzer, Fish and Wildlife Service Regional Special Agent in charge. "This is a good reminder to all hunters to make sure they identify their targets before pulling the trigger." Conservationists said wildlife manager's decision simply reinforces a double standard when it comes to killing endangered wildlife. All hunters have to do is claim they thought they were aiming at something legal to kill. "It's wrong on several levels," said Michael Robinson of the Center for Biological Diversity. "It's part of a broader policy that sends the wrong message." The gray wolf remains a protected species under the U.S. Endangered Species Act outside the 3-state Northern Rockies Recovery Zone of Idaho, Montana, and Wyoming. Federal law provides criminal penalties for those who knowingly kill protected animals, but unknowingly is another matter. And unfortunately, that's all the time we have for the Earth First Update this week. The Earth First Update is produced every Thursday evening, normally in the studios of Free Radio Santa Cruz, but this week at a secret location in the Pacific Northwest. If you'd like to hear a rebroadcast of this program, please tune in at 3 o'clock on Friday afternoons to 101.3 FM Free Radio Santa Cruz. If you're in the Moscow, Idaho area, tune in to KRFP, Radio Free Moscow, 90.3 FM at 9:30 on Monday nights. Or you could go to radioforall.net, that's radio, the number, forall.net, where you can download or listen online to this or any previous Earth First Update. The Earth First Update is a production of Earth First Radio, and is normally produced in the studios of Free Radio Santa Cruz. We want to thank you for listening, and please do tune in next Thursday for another edition of the Earth First Update.